First case of the day, Wagner v. Allied Pilots Association, 09-2509, and for Mr. Wagner, Mr. Boski. Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Mark Dabowski. I represent the plaintiff appellant, Robert Wagner. On account of the blatant inaccuracies in Dr. Antonelli's report, i.e. that Mr. Wagner was disabled 4 years before he claimed that he was disabled, the Supreme Court's emphasis in the MetLife v. Glenn case on accuracy and full and fair review in ERISA claims mandates that the plan was required to consider the rebuttal opinions of Drs. Hain and Black. This court established approximately 20 years ago the concept of the full and fair review in ERISA and its importance. The ERISA statute itself, 29 U.S.C. Section 1133, speaks of the requirement that claimants whose benefits are denied in whole or in part are entitled to a full and fair review. And this court explained in Halpin versus Granger in 1992 that the core requirements of a full and fair review consist of three elements. First, that the claimant is entitled to know the evidence that the plan relied on. Second, that the claimant be able to address the accuracy and reliability of that evidence. And third, that the plan consider all of the evidence, both pro and con, in relation to a claim. Those core requirements were violated in this case when the plan refused to consider the rebuttal to Dr. Antonelli's opinion. Dr. Antonelli's opinion was inherently flawed. By suggesting that Mr. Wagner was disabled 4 years before he became disabled, that is a medical impossibility. There is no way that Mr. Wagner could have flown an airplane for 4 years if he were suffering from perilymph fistula. The record here suggests
the symptoms for which he was treated during that four-year period of time, essentially the same symptoms that he suffers from with that fistula.
It's sort of like a Venn diagram where there's some overlap between different conditions. But in the preceding period, all along, the doctors were treating Mr. Wagner for conditions relating to his sinus. Sinusitis, he had surgery. CT scans were aimed at the sinus. It wasn't until he started experiencing this persistent dizziness, not just transient dizziness, which he had experienced before, that he went to probably one of the world's leading experts on balance disorders, Dr. Timothy Hain, who performed objective testing and gave an opinion that accompanied the claim when it was submitted, that Mr. Wagner's condition was due to perilymph fistula. And Dr. Hain wrote in the attending physician report that the diagnosis was supported.
What are the symptoms?
The symptoms primarily are persistent dizziness.
What are the symptoms of this prior condition?
Some transient dizziness, some pressure in the face, and headaches.
That's Judge Tender's question. The manifestations of the two diseases are frequently the same.
That's absolutely correct, that one can be mistaken for the other, but that's not unusual in medicine.
True.
And, in fact, this court in the Pitcher decision, which is the case that we're primarily relying on in opposition to the conclusion that this was a pre-existing condition, talked about how all of the doctors who were treating Mrs. Pitcher were concerned with the fibrocystic cysts in her breasts. That's all that they had on their minds. They were not thinking about cancer. They didn't start thinking about cancer until after testing was done. Perilymph fistula is not a common condition, and it's something that requires a tremendous amount of testing and can only be proven with certainty if a doctor performs surgery on the inner ear and sees the manifestation. But it can be diagnosed inferentially from testing such as the testing that Dr. Hain performed, which is the echocagliograph.
When did he do that testing?
He started performing that testing in the fall of 2005.
No, the last flight, I believe, was July 21st, 2005. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Did Mr. Wagner take himself out on his own, not to fly for a while?
Evidently, that's correct.
You say evidently, because that's a curiosity I have here. If that's when he quit flying, something must have occurred.
There's nothing in the record. There's no record from American Airlines that says that Mr. Wagner was on medical leave, but there's also an indication from the medical records that Mr. Wagner did not get on an airplane again after he landed that plane on July 21st, 2005. And the records do show that after he landed that plane and was having those symptoms, he went back to the doctor he had been seeing, Dr. Yeh.
So did those symptoms begin immediately after that flight?
The persistent dizziness, yes, but he thought in his mind, presumably, that he was having the same sinus symptoms that he experienced previously, and in fact, Dr. Yeh referred him to have the surgery with Dr. Stankiewicz. But while that improved the sinus symptoms, it didn't improve the persistent dizziness, and that's when Mr. Wagner started seeing Dr. Hain. Dr. Hain performed a variety of tests, and his records are in the claim record here. He first indicated that there was a differential diagnosis, and that indication was in a report he wrote to Mr. Wagner in the fall of 2005. But by 2006, when the claim went in, Dr. Hain had definitively concluded that the diagnosis was perilymph fistula. And in fact, there's a record in the file here, dated June 14, 2006, which is at page 18 of the record. Health First, the third-party administrator, initially approved the claim and stated in that approval letter that perilymph fistula was a medical diagnosis that supported disability. But just a month later, on July 24, 2006, the plan determined that the condition was pre-existing, and although perilymph fistula was indicated on Dr. Hain's attending physician statement from the get-go, there is absolutely no mention of perilymph fistula in either the denial of July 24, 2006, which is at page 22 of the record, or in the second denial on October 12, 2006, which is at page 39 of the record. In effect, the plan ignored that. And if the court were to look at this case from the perspective of what was the evidence before Dr. Antonelli's report, there is no way that this court could have affirmed the plan's decision without Dr. Antonelli's report. There was absolutely no response whatsoever or consideration whatsoever given to Dr. Hain's opinion. In fact, they ignored the perilymph fistula diagnosis altogether. They kept saying, you had dizziness, you had dizziness, you had that before, you have that now. It's only Dr. Antonelli's report that deals with the condition of perilymph fistula. And her report is so inherently contradictory and so unreliable, it's not surprising that when the second concurring expert, Dr. Black, examined Mr. Wagner and reported in rebuttal to Dr. Antonelli's report, he just flat out said it's factually incorrect and said that from a medical standpoint, if indeed Mr. Wagner had perilymph fistula in 2001, as Dr. Antonelli concluded, that Dr. Black wrote, you could not safely pilot an aircraft from 2001 to 2005 had you suffered a perilymph fistula in 2001. But that's not all he said. He went on and suggested that Dr. Antonelli's opinion was drawn from consulting websites, and he said that she doesn't appear to have the training, background, or certification to have given an opinion on this matter. And that's where the ERISA requirements come in and the fiduciary obligations of the plan administrator. This is in effect, I'm not suggesting that Dr. Antonelli is not a licensed physician, but there has to be at some point some court oversight of the accuracy of the medical evidence on which the plan's decision is made. Just because somebody signs their name MD, that should not be the end of the story under ERISA, particularly given the Supreme Court's reemphasis in Glenn on both accuracy and on the full and fair review, which was completely ignored.
Certification regarding pilot fitness. And
she does have, apparently, she indicates in her report that she is certified as a flight examiner, a medical examiner for flight certification. But as Dr. Black suggested, she apparently does not understand otologic conditions. And there's also a mention at the beginning of her report that she consulted with a neurologist, a Dr. Jarris, but nowhere does she indicate what Dr. Jarris inputted as far as her opinion. And she did, in fact, concur with Dr. Haynes' reports all along that perilymph fistula was the likely diagnosis, but then she made this ridiculous conclusion that he had it 4 years previously, which is factually impossible.
Well, what he had previously is what I guess you refer to as this transient stuff. It comes and goes, and you get to take medication, I suppose.
He had allergies. It triggered sinus problems. He had surgery to straighten out his sinuses.
I mean, was that after the last flight?
He did have a surgery in August of 2005. But again, it's the same sort of scenario as in Pitcher, where everybody's thinking, you know, elephant, 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 and it turns out it's a zebra.
No. Because the question, though, is when was it really a zebra? I think that's the trouble with the pre-existing. And also, what was the reason, if there is one, if you know, this hiatus in the policy, the gap where he had to reapply and get into these timing issues that we're dealing with?
You know, that unfortunately, Your Honor, that's not clear from the record. The record does indicate that Mr. Wagner had coverage from October 1996 through August of 2004, and that's shown at page 20 of the record. But then apparently it lapsed for some reason, and then he re-enrolled on March 16, 2005.
Which is the re-enrollment that takes in this pre-existing issue.
It
does. Also the question of when he was actually, I guess, had a disabled or whatever, the 6 months from the period afterward, and those are both timing issues that I know you dispute. But
I'm not suggesting that these are easy issues for anybody to resolve. But if you look at the definition of pre-existing condition in the plan, and the plan has the burden of proving of establishing that the pre-existing condition applies as well as the accident requirement. There are three requirements.
Accident or injury?
Accident or injury. It has to be traumatic. It can't be a disease process. Let me just finish this one comment, and then I'll save the rest for rebuttal.
You can take the whole rebuttal time you want.
I appreciate the invitation, but I'd like to save a little bit. There are three elements to the pre-existing condition. Did he receive medical treatment or consultation? Did he have medical care or services, or did he take prescribed drugs? And with respect to the perilymph fistula, it's 0 for 3 on all three of those elements. He did not meet those elements. And therefore, since the plan had the burden, there is no way that the plan could have met the burden that Mr. Wagner suffered from a pre-existing condition. I'll reserve the rest of my time.
For the appellee, Mr. Dalmat. Probably mispronouncing that, but you'll correct me, I hope.
May it please the court and counsel, my name is Darren Dalmat, and I represent the Allied Pilots Association Disability Income Plan, the appellee in this case. The district court's summary judgment rulings should be upheld for three reasons. First, the plan reasonably concluded that it lacked authority to consider untimely appeal material that Mr. Wagner submitted in light of the plan's mandatory 180-day deadline for submitting such material. Second, the plan reasonably denied Mr. Wagner's claim for benefits on the basis of perilymph fistula in light of the plan's exclusion for disabilities that start within 6 months of coverage. And third, the plan reasonably denied Mr. Wagner's claim for benefits on the basis of the pre-existing condition exclusion in the plan. Before I get to those issues, though, I would like to address the accuracy of Dr. Antonelli's opinion, because that is key to this case. The letters that Mr. Wagner submitted, the untimely letters from Dr. Hain and Dr. Black, are self-contradictory, and they show, in fact, that Dr. Antonelli's opinion was reasonable. In Dr. Black's letter, he explains the mechanism of a paralymph fistula. He explains that a fistula is a tear in the membrane between the inner ear and the middle ear, and that with rest, that tear heals or can heal. But once that tear occurs, subsequently, the person who suffered that kind of condition is more likely to recur and to have subsequent paralymph fistulas. Given that mechanism, what you're likely to see is a periodic pattern of symptoms of paralymph fistula. And that's exactly what the record in this case presents. It presented a periodic pattern of what all the doctors agree were classical symptoms of paralymph fistula in this case, namely disequilibrium accompanied by visual distortion, accompanied by headaches so severe to cause nausea, and occasionally a fullness of the ear. Now, those symptoms are cataloged in Dr. Ye's medical records three times in 2001, again in 2002, again in 2004, which is within 1 year prior to the relevant date of coverage, the date that falls April 1st, 2005, and again the very day before Mr. Wagner flew his last flight. In fact, on that July 20th date, the day before his final flight, Mr. Wagner indicates to his doctor, Dr. Ye, and this is Exhibit F to record number 58, that on that day before the final flight, he reported that these symptoms vary with his flying and when he suffers or when he experiences changes in pressure. And so those are exactly the symptoms of paralymph fistula.
Now he continues to fly. Is there some measure? Does he have to pass a physical? Is it known that he has this condition while he's flying airplanes?
Your Honor,
does somebody monitor it, in other words? Or is it just his discretion?
He does have to get checkups every 6 months as a pilot. He clearly was consulting his doctor, Dr. Ye, for that cluster of symptoms throughout the period prior to coverage. The doctors had not diagnosed it as paralymph fistula at the time, and if they had, perhaps he would have lost his license. I don't know. It's impossible to say.
It's kind of an important thing, it seems. People that fly wonder about the pilot if he's not sure. You know, he's got blurry vision and dizziness and things like that. I just wonder what, from your standpoint and in insurer's standpoint, what the requirements are to make sure that somebody is, I guess, qualified to fly from a medical standpoint.
Well, importantly, under this plan, disability isn't defined solely as having a condition, but it's also defined as having a condition that would interfere with your ability to maintain your pilot's license. There's no evidence in the record to suggest that Mr. Wagner did not have his pilot's license or that he lost it at any point before his final flight. That is not at issue in this case. But it's also not at issue that he sought consultation from his doctor, Dr. Ye, for the hallmark symptoms of paralymph fistula regularly prior to his final flight for those 4 years.
And it was after the final flight that Dr. Ye then, I guess, referred him to whoever it was, did some sort of an operation. Is that it?
He was referred to Dr. Stankovich, who did a sinus surgery.
Was that repairing the membrane or something, whatever they do?
No, Your Honor. That was a different kind of surgery, and it did not resolve the symptoms of paralymph fistula that he was suffering. And so he's following his surgery, went to a second doctor, Dr. Hain. But the important point to remember is that this distinction that counsel for Mr. Wagner is trying to draw between transient dizziness and persistent dizziness is just inconsistent with the mechanism that his own doctor, Dr. Black, described. And so for that reason, Dr. Black and Dr. Haynes' untimely letters that suggest that paralymph fistula symptoms have to be constant That can't hold up with the mechanism that Dr. Black described, and that can't make Dr. Antonelli's opinion any less reasonable.
Well, and clearly he's not eligible to fly now with whatever the diagnosis is. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And so I guess what you're saying is this is a progressive disease and that it reached a point on the last flight, whether it was on July 21st, that it became...
It became disabling under the terms of the plan.
But it was, I guess you would say it was progressive. It went from transient to persistent or something.
That is what the medical records support in this case. And it's also important to remember that the standard of review in this case is an arbitrary and capricious standard, which suggests that the plan's determination must be held as long as there is any rational support for its application of the exclusions in this case. And given that history of symptoms, which did ripen into a disabling condition under the terms of the plan only on July 21st, 2005, it's reasonable for the plan to conclude that that Mr. Wagner had that condition before he joined or rejoined the coverage. Counsel for Mr. Wagner suggested that the record did not have any evidence for what happened with those dates in terms of when he joined and when he left the plan. I refer you to Exhibit A, pages 158 through 159 of Exhibit A to Record Number 58, pages 158 to 59, where Mr. Wagner himself voluntarily writes a letter saying that he voluntarily wants to quit the plan. So we don't know why he did that, but he chose to leave the plan and then rejoin it. And when he rejoined it in 2005, that triggered the applicable exclusions.
This was not his only disability policy, was it? Didn't he have another policy?
He appears to have had one with American Airlines, which is not at issue in this case. The second exclusion that the plan relied on in this case is the exclusion for injuries that occur within 6 months of coverage. There's an exception to that exclusion if the injury was caused by a disability, but Mr. Wagner presented no evidence that his paralymph fistula was caused by an injury that fell within those first 6 months of coverage in this case.
I mean, that flight didn't cause this, or I guess it would have to be after that. Well, I'm not that, this, if it had occurred on this flight, something happened where it changed everything, then he would be covered. Is that correct?
Yes. If he could show that there was an injury, and he suggests a barotrauma, that occurred on that date, and on no other date, then he would be covered. But the problem is that he had suffered many symptoms of paralymph fistula prior to that, and his doctors were not able to present evidence that that was, in fact, the date when an injury occurred. He had the classical symptoms of paralymph fistula the day before his final flight. He had it several months before that, in August 2004, and he had it several years before that, which is indicated throughout Dr. Ye's medical records. And so while his condition may have been exacerbated on that date, there's no indication in the record that his injury or any injury that caused paralymph fistula was on that date in particular, in light of his prior medical history.
But there was no diagnosis of that particular disease prior to the first one after the policy came out.
Correct, Your Honor. That his paralymph fistula was not diagnosed until after his coverage began, but it's not the date of diagnosis that matters.
I understand that. But the manifestations are almost the same, aren't they?
No, Your Honor.
Could it have been a misdiagnosis?
Could what have been a misdiagnosis?
The prior diagnosis, could that have been overlooking the ultimate decision? ultimate diagnosis?
Yes, Your Honor. If his diagnosis for sinusitis may have been an incomplete diagnosis, and he may have had paralymph fistula all along.
That's a position you have to take, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I mean, that we, our position is that he did have paralymph fistula prior to coverage, and a misdiagnosis prior to coverage is not enough to render the pre-existing condition exclusion inapplicable. Doroshow against Hartford Life Insurance is a good example of a case where there was a misdiagnosis during the pre-existing condition period.
So you have the burden of proving the misdiagnosis.
Under arbitrary and capricious review, the plan's sole burden is to show that it did not act arbitrarily or capriciously. And that applies.
In order to do that, you'd have to show, it would be your burden to show there was a misdiagnosis, which is back to my question. That's capable of a yes or no answer, by the way.
I don't believe that the plan has a burden to show a misdiagnosis. It only has to show that there was rational support in the record for a conclusion that he had paralymph fistula prior.
If I understand it correctly, you have the burden of showing that the condition that you're claiming it was before existed did exist, and that would require your showing that even though it did exist and he went to doctors, they didn't diagnose it, so the diagnosis they gave was a misdiagnosis.
Under Manny against Central State.
I don't care about that. I'm asking about the instant case. Did you have the requirement to prove that the diagnosis originally nailed to this guy was wrong?
No, we did not have the burden to prove that. We only have to show that the plan's conclusion that he had pre-existing, that he had paralymph fistula was reasonable based on the prior symptoms.
You do not have to show that the diagnosis was wrong. The first diagnosis was wrong.
We've never contended that the diagnosis was wrong, only that it was incomplete.
Well, an incomplete diagnosis for practical purposes is a wrong diagnosis. Is it not? Tell me what the difference is. If I diagnose you with appendicitis and you really have a ruptured spleen, what difference does it make? Well, whether you died of a ruptured spleen, the diagnosis had it been ascertained ahead of time would have shown what was not. So the diagnosis was a misdiagnosis.
Your Honor, I don't believe that we have that burden, but even if we do have that burden, I believe that the record, Dr. Ye's medical records, shows that the classical symptoms of paralymph
fistula. Back to that, you still claim it was a misdiagnosis. Whether you had the burden or not, you still believe that.
Yes, that it was an incomplete diagnosis. Yes, Your Honor.
The only issue is whether or not you had the burden of demonstrating it.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
The final point I would like to make is that the plan did not err in concluding that that it lacked the authority to consider. Well, I see my time is up.
You can finish your point.
To consider untimely appeal material in light of the 180-day deadline in the plan. Thank you, Your Honors.
You, Mr. Boski, you have rebuttal.
2 minutes.
First of all, just to make the record clear, paralymph fistula is not a progressive condition. It's a traumatic condition. All of the records, including Dr. Antonelli's report, indicated that barotrauma is a classic trigger for the development of a paralymph fistula. With respect to what Dr. Black said, page 132 of the record, Dr. Black said in his first bullet point, your paralymph fistula symptoms first occurred during descent for landing at Chicago's O'Hare Field in July 2005. Same paragraph, he said, you had never experienced such symptoms previously and that you had flown F-15 fighters in the Air Force with no such complaints or problems.
So it depends on the subjective symptoms of the patient. to diagnose the disease?
No. It partially depends on that.
Well, that would trigger your investigation.
But what Dr. Hain relied on, and it's clearly indicated in his attending physician statement, is objective testing that supported his clinical finding. And Dr. Hain also indicated in his report at page 135 of the record, beginning in July 2005, Mr. Wagner experienced a large increase in his symptoms of dizziness. These are new symptoms that didn't exist before. And just to conclude, by going back to Pitcher at page 413 of the decision, the court stated, all concerned assumed they were dealing with the longstanding fibrocystic breast condition manifesting itself in the form of cysts, masses, and formations of fibrous tissue in both breasts. That is completely analogous to this situation. All of the doctors were thinking sinus, sinus, sinus. It wasn't until later when Dr. Hain did differential testing that he came up with the different diagnosis. And secondly, Pitcher is also important for concluding that there's no causal relationship between the condition that was looked at prior to the effective date of the policy and the condition after. Here, too, there is no causal connection. So we request that the court reverse the decision below.
All right. Thank you. We'll take the case under advisement.